from Pragosh Das. The exhilaration I got from distributing books was just incredible. It became extremely blissful to go out and do this. None of us could actually put a finger on why it was so ecstatic. In Tripurari, I was trained by Srila Prabhupada more from within my own heart. I think that's the case with all of our book distributors. They have a very intimate sense of feeling for Prabhupada, but they never had much personal contact. And here's a statement by Sura. That in the airport we would meet so many educated peoples and they would challenge. We would constantly have to defend Prabhupada's books and his movement and speak up on behalf of Prabhupada more so than when we were just kids on the parking lot talking to women and begging 50 cents for a pack of incense. We were presenting Prabhupada's books to the scholars, coming into contact with Mayavadi scientists, businessmen, people who were very sharp in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, etc. People were sharp and hard, and just by having to spiritually combat them and defend the movement, we became more mature in our understanding of Prabhupada's books and how to present them in such a way that we could convince even people who didn't want to be convinced. We had to study Prabhupada's books. The history, it did start in America, included the temple distribution at the airports and other places around the city, and then traveling parties. Radha Damodar party grew to 3 big Greyhound buses traveling all over distributing books, competition between parties, a library party going to the universities and getting full sets put in. Now more about Prabhupada and his involvement. It was something that was personally rejuvenating to him. Again, if he's mostly like sitting and hearing news, but that's very real participation. Prabhupada tells about that story of why the play Sajahan had that title, although one reader on reading it thought, why is this play called Sahajan? It's actually all about the activities of Aurangzeb, the Hindu, the Muslim emperor. So the author explained that Sahajan, the father of Aurangzeb, who was put in jail, and when he heard all the atrocious activities being done by his sons and everything, all these things were beating on his heart. So he's the real hero. So Prabhupada is the hero of book distribution, because he was hearing everything. It was beating on his heart in a good way, and he was encouraging everybody and writing the books, and very much, he said it rejuvenated him. He felt he could live longer, and he felt like a young man by hearing the results. He also got involved in all aspects of book production. He would ask the temples and write them letters, why you're not paying your BBT bill. And he saw book distribution as the only business necessary to support ISKCON, so very strongly involved. And as we read from Tripurari's memoir, the devotees felt in reciprocation very close to him because of these statements, not so much from Vapu or personal association. But by following the order of the spiritual master, many disciples and grand disciples of Prabhupada do feel close to him. It's available to all devotees, not just by book distribution. But as some of the devotees here have said, there's a special feeling of ecstasy or intimacy with Prabhupada by distributing his books. The spirit of selfless surrender and dependence on Krishna, and dedicating everything to the spiritual master. This experience is the essence of spiritual life, whatever your service may be. Someone actually here handed me in a paper. It wasn't signed, and I don't have it right now. But the question was, Prabhupada has said book distribution is important. Is this the only service? Can we do any other service and please Prabhupada? So what is the answer to that question? Not just in one word, but someone could explain it a little. Gaur Bhakti?
For Krishna, all the things are the same. In one case, the toilet, or the temple, or the books. All are devotees. There's no distinct devotee, it's just devotee, which is the Krishna's devotion. Devotee offered to themselves. So for Krishna, there is no difference.
Whatever differences there are in devotees, and we find that there are, as Tamal Krishna Maharaj was describing about the devotees in the different rasas with Krishna in the class, but that difference is because of sincerity or surrender or taste and so on, individual differences and qualities, but it's not fixed up just in a particular department. As Prabhupada explained in some letters when the devotees were in controversy about that, he said, it's not fixed up in a particular service or department. So if those qualities are, qualities of surrender and so on, are demanded more in books distribution, then one can advance very quickly. But one can certainly please Prabhupada just as much. Well, if he's getting the cement for building the Vrindavan temple, or he's preaching in the colleges, or editing Chaitanya Charitamrita, or whatever. But depending on the devotee's quality. Yes?
About for services to inspire or assist the book distribution or company like that?
Yes, so even if we admit the preeminent position of book distribution and one is not distributing books, then he can see what he's doing as part of the book distribution, as it takes so many. In a war, there's somebody who shoots the rifle and then behind him there's so many other persons. In fact, we're now going to discuss some more of that, about that book production in Prabhupada at this time in his life. Another look at the theme, Two Worlds. In 1975, after the day or so after, the deities have been installed here with great success. Prabhupada was sitting in his room and he called in some of the senior devotees and he was expressing his dissatisfaction that his books were not being printed. He said it was more important than the temple opening. It was a dramatic occasion to say that because he had worked so hard for the temple opening, and now he said that in spite of the great significance of establishing such a beautiful temple in Vrindavan, which is the source of inspiration for devotees everywhere, the book distribution was more important. So what was the problem that he was talking about? I'm asking you from your reading. What was it that was unpublished? Ladies and gentlemen. The entire Chaitanya Charitamrita had been written and was just piling up and wasn't being published. What was the problem? Why was there a delay? Some of the reasons, aside from, you could sum it up and say Maya or lack of surrender or something, the practical reasons was offered by the BBT that we have no Bengali editor. The press has just moved their headquarters from New York to Los Angeles. The buildings are not complete there. We have no facilities for the artists who have painted pictures for the rooms, no lights for their rooms. So these were some of the reasonable explanations. Prabhupada expressed that in Vrindavan and then expressed it some more when he traveled after that to Hawaii, and then he got to Los Angeles and made an ultimatum to the devotees that they had to print these books immediately. So they had been producing books at a rate of one book every 4 months. And so what now, Prabhupada, what did he propose they should... one every 4 months. So Prabhupada said this wasn't good enough. And then the book, the BBT manager, Ramaswar, said, Prabhupada, I think if we completely surrender to your word and do all we can completely revolutionize our output, and we'll do one book every month. So what was Prabhupada's response to this? He said 17 books in 2 months he wanted. And Ramaswar and his manager, Radhabalaba, were stunned. And Ramaswar said, Prabhupada, I think that's impossible. And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. So Jayadwaita Maharaj was involved in that. Would you like to describe any incidents or what it was like when that began? I remember you're stating in a philosophical way that the principle involved was that devotees tend to adjust the order of the guru according to their lives, fit it in. But now they had to adjust their lives in order to follow the order of the guru.
It was the difference between... just doing your routine work and being completely absorbed in doing what Prabhupada wanted. I think we were doing one book every 2 months, but it was, we come in every day and 9 o'clock and we do a full day's work and maybe a little bit beyond that. And you were engaged, you were busy, you were and your Krishna consciousness changed all the time. But and that was nice. But then when Prabhupada said 17 books in 2 months, it just meant everything had to go. All your time, all your energy, all your everything. You just had time to chant our rounds and attend Mangalarti, someplace or other, take a little prasadam, and just be always engaged in working on the books. Which was great.
Was there much complaining about it?
Oh, no, there's no complaining. Yeah. I mean, sometimes there'd be a complaining of the sort of, 7 pages, how do you expect me to do 7 pages in the end? That sort of complaint.
Oh, yeah, I heard of tearing paintings away before they were finished. And that kind of complaint.
Well, that had been standard for a long time. Just to get the book every 2 months, I had to do that. Yeah. The paintings never got finished. I think that is the practice of the boss.
Yeah.
But this was just, there was just no time to consider, well, this is such and such a thing, he's going to work on it, nobody else can work, everybody has to get it done. Pages would just show up on your desk, you just have to get it out by the morning or by the week, whatever it was. And of course, the people who were coordinating it, which was really a great accomplishment, Ravi Shankar and Manipal, who were always running around trying to figure out different ways to squeeze the karmas to get them to do things, or squeeze the employees to do things, or provide facility. They did a lot of just to see that everything.
Whatever you needed to keep going. Whatever you needed, if you needed some special diet or this or that. Yeah, they were great.
All you have to think about was how you have to do your work.
Yeah.
So that was really...
Now, Ramaswar, he asked Prabhupada that we can do it if you do certain things. And they wanted Prabhupada to stay there. And he agreed, but then he left. So how did you feel about Prabhupada and what he's doing in this marathon?
This really presented a problem. I think that was a Sanskrit department request. It didn't affect the English efforts very much. I think we maybe left Raghuna behind at that time. And I think that's what happened. I think he left Raghuna behind. Very well. He was doing answering questions.
Were there any murmurs or rumors that Prabhupada as being a little unreasonable or anything like that?
No, it was like everybody liked it. It was that I always used to think of Prabhupada not just in this instance, but from time to time it seemed to be Prabhupada's program to upset the apple carts. You have a standard way of doing things, a standard routine, and Prabhupada would just kick over the apple cart. You'd have to do things a completely different way. With book distribution, you did that. You'd be, devotees were going out, and they take breakfast, they go out, distribute books, maybe they take lunch, or they come back for lunch, go out to some more books. And then things were going on. Then Prabhupada wrote and said, just leave one person behind to worship the deities, and send everybody out on book distribution, and they can take one big meal in the morning and go out and stay out all day. So it just completely upset everything, right? Everybody's conception of what Krishna consciousness was, what preaching was, what a temple was. Probably just kicked it over and brought it to a new level. And everybody liked it. Nobody said, wow, you know, I'm only getting 10 times a day.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah, glad that he had stepped in and did something. Now it was like reality.
All that air.
I remember when Prabhupada disbanded the GBC in 71 or something like that. We were in control of everything, and then suddenly he said to the devotees, don't listen to them. If he could do it. Any more about that marathon? It was done. They did it?
Yeah. It was, even for the material world, it was, I think, the largest order of books that had ever been placed on the West Coast. All the paper companies and the book producing companies, and everybody was just, they had to go to all sorts of extraordinary lengths to make sure that it happened. And we had to go to find paper one place and get into the pictures done in another place and get the text done in another place and shipping the different parts around. So there was a lot of that sort of thing. I remember there, sometime later, there was a fellow who worked for one of our printers. His name was Paul Blair. And he was like our account representative for that printer. And this was a little sometime after this happened. Maybe it was at that time. There were a couple of letters that came from different people at our suppliers. Paul Blair was one of them. And it started out like a kind of an ordinary courtesy business letter, like, you know, we're so grateful for this opportunity to be able to do this work for your request and so on. But that letter I remember especially, it just kind of went on and it became eloquent. He said, I just feel that it's the greatest thing in my life that I have this opportunity to publish such important books, and I just want to go on publishing.
Caught up in Sankirtan. Any more? They finally, there was some Bhagavatams thrown in too, weren't there?
Yeah, there were two volumes of Adi Leela already done. And there were two volumes of Fifth Canto, and I think there was something Spanish on the side, maybe a book or two there. So it came to 17 books and change that we did. Fifth Canto was going on at that time. We were doing those illustrations for it. And that was exciting also. And that was a hard canto with all the astrology and so on, just to figure out. We'd never seen the universe before.
That was part of that 17
and 18. I remember I was sitting in my office with like little paper Dixie cups trying to. Okay, the sun is here, and trying to figure out. And it took a while to figure out that the Earth was in the middle.
middle and the others are going around and like donuts.
There are stories that the way it doesn't jibe with material science, that on some points apparently Ramaswar would just get baffled and he would call Prabhupada somewhere in the world and say, this says this, but how can we print this? And his secretary would tell Prabhupada and come back and say, Prabhupada said your question is not intelligent. Just print it as it is. If they were like wanting something else, but he was sticking to what he had there.
As a consequence of that, Fitz Cantu also left people left. That's another thing that happened. We lost quite a number of devotees who just couldn't take it.
Yeah.
But in fact, Prabhupada asked me later in Los Angeles and said, one day he's talking to me about followers, said, are you sorry when I criticize the scientists so much? You're best, you know, like you're. And he said that sometimes it was hard to swallow, but now we weren't. It was like he was just doing a poll, you know.
Yeah. I can finish up with a few more two worlds themes. On Prabhupada's 75 tour, he went to Detroit, and there is a good example, the Fisher Mansion. Devotees had looked at it, but it was a high crime rate neighborhood. Well, they really weren't so inclined. But Prabhupada, even without seeing it, he right away was very positive. We must get this place. If the thieves come, we can just tell them that to take prasadam, things like that. He wasn't afraid. Then they went and looked at it. I won't tell the whole story, but on that theme, Ambarish, who was like expected to pay for half of it, Prabhupada said, what do you think of it? And he said, I think it's Maya, Prabhupada. He didn't like the place. He said it was so vulgar with all its the way the money was spent to decorate all the rooms. And I think it's Maya. And Prabhupada said, Maya can also be used in the service of Krishna. So the two worlds were really united in that venture. And another one is when Prabhupada went to New York and held the Ratha Yatra with three carts down Fifth Avenue, and then there was newspaper reportage. Prabhupada particularly liked the New York Daily News center spread, where several photographs bore a large caption, Fifth Avenue, where East meets West. Send this cutting to many places, Prabhupada said. Send it to Indira Gandhi. This title is very nice. This is the point. East meets West. As I always say, the lame man meets the blind man. Together they do wonderful, and apart they cannot do anything. He is lame, and he is blind. But if they join together, Indian culture and American money, that they will save the whole world. And then the New York Times quoted an Indian immigrant saying, we love New York City. America is the most beautiful place in the world. No other country will give such freedom for our ceremony. That's a fact, Prabhupada said. That I always say. The Times first published about my activities when I was in Tompkins Square Park. So we have to continue in this spirit of bringing the two worlds together. Now, there's the weekend, 2 days off, and then we come back again. That's all. Wednesday or Thursday? Thursday. Yeah. I'll have the exam next Thursday. The outline has only one more class, class number 20, which will be on Tuesday, but I have another class called Your Prabhupada, and so that will be Wednesday, and then Thursday you have the exam. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, Gita.
Interview.
What?
Interview.
So we're fortunate today that His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj is going to participate. Actually, without him, the presentation of this subject, Prabhupada's last year, and the last instructions he taught, would be very difficult to describe with feeling and realization, except in a second-hand way, and with much of what we've heard from him. Before we begin, I just have an announcement that we're a day late now because we missed a class yesterday. So tomorrow will be the last lecture, that's Thursday, and then Friday will be the exam for this class. We call this class The Last Instructions. Well, Vaishnavas usually do not find it palatable to discuss the disappearance pastimes of the Lord or the pure devotee. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya's disappearance is not mentioned at all in the Chaitanya Charitamrita because the devotees feel too much pain to hear about his departure. So the question may be raised, why are we discussing about Prabhupada's last days? And I briefly address that in a stanza in Remembering Prabhupada. The disappearance of Lord Krishna is not much told in Bhagavatam, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is nothing at all about the parting of Gauranga, although the parting of Haridas is there. Prabhupada tells us the Vaishnavas do not like to hear it, but in the biography of Prabhupada I told up to the end because devotees insisted, and I also saw the many lessons he imparted while leaving the world, including what we all must learn. He taught us how to die. And more, he saved until the end, final, lasting lessons, drawing out deepest love from his anxious disciples. Therefore, to at least outline these teachings, we go further, or we write further, or we discuss it today. So we only have an hour for this presentation. So rather than try to go month by month through this year, I've selected three themes or kinds of instructions that Prabhupada taught. And we'll discuss one, and then the other, and then the other. And we may discuss other things also, but this general theme. So the first, I'll state briefly what they are. The first is that Prabhupada was drawing the devotees nearer to him to increase their love. And the second is he was showing us how to die. And the third, he was emphasizing through his last days that we will please him by enthusiastically preaching in ISKCON. And we hope, as we've been doing throughout this course, to tell pastimes, tell the philosophy involved, and also seek an application of this for today. I think Prabhupada would prefer this kind of presentation about his last days to emphasize the living instruction. We're asking, how can we live up to the instructions that Prabhupada taught in the last year? When it appeared that Prabhupada was seriously ill and he was going to leave this world, his disciples all wanted him to stay. And it was a little bit similar to in 1967 when he also appeared to be ill very much and was going to leave. And in that case, he gave us the prayers to pray to Lord Nrisimha, our master has not finished his work. When the disciples asked Prabhupada in 1977 that we could pray, he gave us the prayer, "My dear Lord Krishna, if you desire, please cure Prabhupada." And there were also services that we were able to render that were particular to his condition. So these particular services that he gave in the last year were unique. So now I want to begin asking Tamal Krishna Maharaj about this, because as I think you all know, either by reading the Prabhupada Lilamrita or other sources, that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was his personal secretary and servant, along with other servants, in that last year. So my first question is, we've heard that the intimacy of exchange which Prabhupada gave to devotees in these last months was more complete than anything he had given before. Do you think that's a true statement, and why?
I wanted to add one point. When you first began, you said, was it appropriate that we speak on this topic? One of the proofs that it is that when Yadubara Prabhu was filming, Prabhupada said that he should be allowed, although some of us objected that it was inappropriate to film Prabhupada in his bed and in these last days. Prabhupada said, no, let him film everything. Because whatever he likes, let him film. So Prabhupada knew that this was going to be a permanent record. And I think it indicated that he was very much aware of the fact that what he was doing was meant for the purpose of teaching us, and that he knew it would be carefully scrutinized, and he wanted it preserved as a record. So there's no doubt that if people feel adverse to discussing these matters, then why did Prabhupada ask Yadubara Prabhu to film? As far as your question, whether the exchanges were more complete than anything before, I thought about this, and it seems to me that the main difference between the service which Prabhupada allowed us to perform in the final months and at other times was that generally the relationship between the guru and disciple is full of awe and reverence, because it's a relationship of master and servant. But the very nature of the type of service we were doing was so intimate, and Prabhupada seemed to increase the intimacy by allowing himself to be more dependent upon us than he had ever appeared to be before. I recall, for example, once we were walking in Calcutta, Prabhupada took me to a bank. We were doing some banking work in Calcutta. So after we finished with the bank, we got out on the street and we had to get a taxi. And Prabhupada said, there's a taxi. And he immediately hailed the taxi and ran across the street right through the traffic. And I was just standing there, you know, holding the umbrella, supposed to be holding the umbrella to shade him from the sun. And Prabhupada had already went through the traffic to catch the taxi. So it was very clear all along that we were the ones who were totally dependent on him in all respects. He was far more able, competent, energetic than we were. But it seems that in the final year, he behaved in such a way as if to bring out from us the mood of giving care to him, as if he was dependent upon us. And by doing this, it increased the intimacy of the relationship. In other words, a servant is always subordinate and subservient. But when there's parental affection or in friendship, certainly there is a type of intimacy which is shared, which is not available in the master-servant relationship. So I think especially when one is ill, it brings out from those who are caring for that person a type of protective concern that a parent would have. So that automatically made the relationship more intimate. And I would say that's where the intimacy came in more. As far as it being more complete, I don't feel that would be fair to say that the service rendered at that time was more complete than any other time. I mean, when one reads the Lilamrita, one sees how, you know, complete service was possible at all times to Srila Prabhupada. But the nature of the service at this time seemed to me to be different.
I think that partly answers the next question I had. And because I wanted to talk about the numbers of people who were able to do this service. It wasn't, that's not that you were the only one there. Still, it was relatively small. It was, but it was also open to visitors. And I can describe, because I visited about three times during that year. So a visitor to Vrindavan when Prabhupada was in his last months was invited to come into his room and have kirtan. He wanted kirtan all the time with very small kartels that are still down in his room. So we'd sing, you could sing kirtan and be very close to him and sometimes do other services, assisting his servants or even massaging and so on. But to his secretary and servant, numbering in 3, 4, 5, were most of the very intimate services, so that they would bathe Prabhupada, sit him up, walk him to the bathroom, and he would say to them, "Encourage me." And these were the duties that we read that Narottam Das Thakur did for his spiritual master Lokanath Maharaj, even in the bathroom duties, and which Ishwar Puri did for his spiritual master. So my question is, if that experience of intimacy was to only a very few servants, how can it be of significance to others who were not there and who didn't do it?
Maybe I'm doubtful about my answer because it seems like an obvious answer, but perhaps it's not the right answer then.
Probably is.
I think that we all gain by hearing about it from others. So I think those who took part in that service, and I think it's not fair to be, you know, you should, in all truthfulness, say that you were not just a visitor because you were there for many months at a time, and I felt that you were one of the intimate servants yourself, especially not only because of that time, but all of the many years you had always served Prabhupada, and I think there were others like that also. So it's not fair to describe yourself merely as a visitor, but I think that you were one of the intimate servants. And it seemed that Prabhupada allowed us... directly to answer your question, I think others can gain from this by hearing from us about the types of services we did render, and hopefully, you know, we may have come to a more mature understanding of how to relate with a spiritual master. Sometimes think about when I'm going to see Prabhupada physically next time. And this, next time I'm going to get, among other things, I'll try to avoid committing a lot of the mistakes I made last time. But I also think the main thing I think about is how I'll be able to serve him with much more intimacy. That the awe and reverence will be replaced more by love, by genuine feelings of, of loving feelings, which are not so much overwhelmed by feelings of fear or making mistakes. So I think that perhaps since everything we do is service to Guru, all that we do is service to Guru throughout the day, throughout our lives, if we've come to that stage a little bit more by serving Prabhupada during that time, it should be perceivable in all that we do all of the time. In other words, our dealings with others should also have a more intimate type of mood to them, and I think others will benefit by that. So this is parampara. This is how it will be shared. You're writing about it, and others will do it in other ways.
So to the degree that a few of you did experience things that others didn't, we can hear from you. Even then we did. We would go, we would look at your diary, what did he say, what is he thinking, and so on. So that can continue. I think you just answered my other question, which was, does this service that you did then so intensely remain with you now and as a part of your permanent relationship with Prabhupada? Were you saying that just now that because of the intimacy you had then, you think that will help you in the future to get over awe and reverence because you've already gotten past awe and reverence?
Yeah, I think so.
So it was a permanent thing. Because it's true, I wasn't a visitor, but I felt that difficulty about awe and reverence. So that was one of the things that, by enduring the austerities that were demanded of you to stay with him at all times and to do all that you had to do, he brought you over the standard barrier of guru-disciple. And that's what I was trying to get at with this question. Is that a permanent gain? And you said it in a sense. You know?
Just,
What about the danger involved in when the guru is ill? Like in 1967, he later said that the devotee who was taking care of him and massaging him actually began to think that Swamiji got well because of my massages, and this caused him a fall down. So, how did you avoid that? Thinking that he actually is dependent on you.
Sometimes it's said that I'm not making a comparison in terms of rasa with the gopis, but, well, not just the gopis, all of the Vrijbasis for that matter, they have full knowledge, but their knowledge is covered by their natural spontaneous love for Krishna. But it's not that they don't have full knowledge. They know fully, and they have all knowledge. They're the most intelligent of all. And sometimes Krishna allows that knowledge to come into their consciousness, as he did when he opened his mouth and showed Mother Yasoda the whole universe. But most of the time, when she looks in his mouth, she sees only dirt. She just sees her little child with his teeth coming in and things like this. So I think it's a question of a proper mood of a servant is that he will respond to the needs and the mood of the master. But and in this case, it was one of Prabhupada wanting very tender, affectionate dealings. But he never forgets within also his position as a servant. And I remember one devotee, for example, was insisting that Prabhupada, should do a certain thing. And Prabhupada didn't want to do that. So that devotee just became frustrated and felt that it was impossible to really serve Prabhupada properly in that situation. So I guess that was not the right mood to be in. In other words, one had to sort of maintain a remembrance that I am simply the servant and this is my spiritual master. But the particular service that he's asking of me at this moment is to be very affectionate. And, you know, like Prabhupada sometimes would want me just to stroke his body. I mean, he would say, you know, or another time he asked me, just chant japa with me. He said, I'm having difficulty, you know, chanting out loud, so just chant with me. And he'd made me sit next to him on the bed and just chant. And he chanted along. I mean, there were millions of little things like this which were very affectionate dealings. But I think one always had to remember. And he could remind one also. He would remind one sometimes. He would break the, break that type of theme by suddenly taking the position, even in a, in his frail condition, of being the master and putting you in place if you needed to be.
I remember being impressed by one of his servants when I came, and he was saying that Prabhupada gets thinner and thinner and he looks so different than he was before, but I always think this is still Srila Prabhupada. So that was not a different person. So that was awareness of the spiritual body, that the spiritual master's body is always spirit with. Now, to move on to another topic under this drawing of love, and that is a loving conflict that developed. Several conflicts, one between Prabhupada and the disciples, between apparently between Krishna and Prabhupada, and between Krishna and Prabhupada's disciples. This is all described in the Prabhupada Lilamrita and also in Tamal Krishnamaraj's drama. So I have just very briefly outlined it. You wouldn't understand this unless you've already read it, but this may refresh your mind. Of steps that when the Prabhupada and the devotees went through in this conflict. I'll read these and then I'll ask Tamal Krishnamurti's question. Well, first of all, the Prabhupada indicated that Krishna wanted him to leave, and therefore he wanted to comply with Krishna's will. But then, at one point, he said that Krishna was giving him free will to stay or leave. So when the disciples heard that, they pleaded with Prabhupada, if you have free will, then please stay. And Prabhupada agreed. But then, as time went by, Krishna insisted that Prabhupada should come back. And Prabhupada complied, and the devotees complied. But there was conflict along the way. So my question is, these persons, Prabhupada and his disciples, Krishna and Prabhupada and his disciples, they're not supposed to be in conflict with each other, especially the disciples and Prabhupada. So how do you understand these disagreements? And
again, I think that this indicates that the type of serving mood was elevated to a different level in these past times with Prabhupada than ever before. It was much more spontaneous, and on the spontaneous platform, emotions which appear to be, you know, contradictory almost, are actually favorable. For example, to disagree with one's spiritual master is most unfavorable for one's spiritual advancement. But when Prabhupada, for example, said, I want to go to Govardhan, and we said that, you know, you shouldn't go to Govardhan, it's not the right thing to do. And finally it got to the point where we were so much in anxiety that we rushed into Prabhupada and we just said, you know, we just can't allow this. I mean, we were practically saying, we won't do what you want us to do. Then immediately he responded by saying, just see how much they love me. So he didn't take it that this was a indication of an apparat, an offense against the spiritual master, but rather a sign of greater love. So just like Mother Yasoda threatens Krishna with a stick, to if you go in front of a deity and hold a stick in front of the deity, you know, if someone does that, we think that person's going to attack the deity, and we defend the deity against that person. But in this case, you know, it was like Krishna was acting in a way to make Mother Yasoda pick up the stick. So I think in some ways that these, you know, actually by Prabhupada's purity, and he actually evoked from us a very high level of love, more than we were, you know, had previously been able to render to him, to a degree that we gave up any fear of opposing him sometimes, but the reason why we gave it up was one of actual love for him, not for any selfish reason or sense gratification on our part. So I'm trying to say that we don't think that Mother Yasoda's holding a stick, you know, or chastising Krishna shows that she's not in accordance with Krishna's desire. That's the nature of pastimes, and these are pastimes. The spiritual master is a pure devotee, comes into this world, and his activities are also called lila. They're not subject to the laws of material nature.
So this is more evidence that there were special pastimes with Prabhupada, because there weren't any kind of prolonged conflicts before. They couldn't last more than 5 minutes or something, and Prabhupada would make it clear that we had to agree with what he wanted. Giriraj Maharaj, you were mentioning once about the conflict between Krishna and the devotees, that the devotees were, some devotees were, I don't know if you're mentioning it yourself or others that you had observed, were resentful of Krishna, that he was taking our Guru Maharaj away. How is that resolved?
Srila Prabhupada gave some suggestion in the prayer that he gave, that my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, then please cure Srila Prabhupada, establishing Krishna's supreme will. But still, at least from amongst our talks, amongst ourselves, some of us did have some sense of resentment towards Krishna for taking Srila Prabhupada from us. And of course, bhakti means to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. So if it was the pleasure of Krishna to have Srila Prabhupada with him, we shouldn't want to oppose the will of Krishna or the pleasure of Krishna. But then again, some devotees expressed in the same mood of questioning that Krishna has so many pure devotees, but we only had Srila Prabhupada. So I think here also is the question of the maturity of the devotees. At the time we felt completely dependent on Srila Prabhupada in a more physical sense of being dependent on Prabhupada's personal presence. And so when he left, it was like we lost our father, mother, friend, and everything. But after Prabhupada left, we learned more about service and separation, and how by serving the spiritual master in separation, not only can we feel the presence of the spiritual master, but our relationship with the spiritual master can develop and mature. And actually, after years of service and separation to Srila Prabhupada, we may be able to appreciate Srila Prabhupada now more in some ways than we did when he was physically present. So I think now we can appreciate the beauty and the munificence, in one sense, of what Krishna and Prabhupada both did.
I'd like to comment some more on that. Prabhupada's going back to Krishna was a joyous for him and for Krishna. He would get Prabhupada back in his original form. But unhappy for us. But so that's our immaturity. But also there's evidence that it's not only immature, but it's a bona fide spiritual emotion. In the example of Raghunath Das Goswami, when Rupa Goswami left, that's when he composed those lines that, now I see the Radhakund like a python in front of me, and I see Govardhan like a tiger. Because by seeing those things, he remembered Rupa Goswami and felt the pain of his disappearance. So, but the resentment toward Krishna would seem particularly immature. I don't know, on a certain level maybe that's a rasa too. But you say it's mostly resolved in understanding Prabhupada and separation.
Yeah. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that when Lord Chaitanya was personally present, the mood that he established by his personal presence covered some of the truths about who Lord Chaitanya actually was and what his mission actually was. So I think also that in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence, the mood that he set, playing the role that he played, predominated very strongly. But that after he left, and by service and separation and by the will of Krishna and Prabhupada, we could appreciate him in other ways or in deeper ways than we could even when he was personally present.
So I want to move on to the second theme about death, that Prabhupada taught us how to die. So, as he said to one sannyasi disciple of his, don't think this won't happen to you. One of the difficulties we'll all experience is the physical pain or the mental fear that accompanies it. So, Prabhupada, he showed detachment and tolerance from material suffering associated with dying. I wonder, Jamal Krishna Maharaj, if you can give any impressions of this or examples.
Of course, the whole time Prabhupada was physically ill, yet he never expressed the ordinary emotions that one undergoes when one suffers illness. The biggest emotion one suffers is lamentation, loss of health, and perhaps loss of life. Prabhupada definitely never lamented like this. In fact, he always, when anyone would break down and cry, which often happened, he would immediately correct them, saying, "Why are you lamenting? You know, don't you know what the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is? There's nothing to lament for." He would always remind them. So there was no question of lamentation. As far as physical conditions go, I remember one time his body, one of the conditions of his body was that it would swell. The outermost parts of his body, like his hands and feet, would swell up. So to reduce the swelling, we would put powder on it. Calcium chloride. I think it was calcium chloride, which is a white powder. So his whole body was covered with this powder one day, and he said, "Now I look just like Lord Shiva." You know, so he would always be in that type of mood of, you know, observing his physical condition. He would make jokes about it like this. Of course, sometimes there were just many cases where he was extremely tolerant. I remember when we took him to London on the plane. The plane couldn't land at a couple of places, and there were difficulties. The whole thing was a very arduous journey. But Prabhupada never complained. He just tolerated the whole thing. He never, ever complained about his physical condition. And I can, you know, anticipating your next question, did he actually suffer or not? I remember during the final days, he didn't speak very much. And sometimes his body would move and wave his arms and his legs in a way which was very, it looked like there was a lot of suffering. And I recall at that time that Narayan Maharaj was visiting regularly, and he came, and when he saw this, he immediately, you know, I said, "What does this indicate?" And he said that this is a sign of ecstasy, that he's not actually suffering, but these are ecstatic symptoms. And the Kaviraj had another explanation. He said the airs in the body are moving in different ways. But Prabhupada didn't really complain. He didn't say, "I'm suffering." And he did speak occasionally. So he could have said that, but he didn't. But that was Narayan Maharaj's explanation, that Prabhupada was experiencing a type of ecstasy, ecstatic symptoms. So overall, however, I would say that he was just very much beyond bodily conception of life. And he had the ability to observe his body just as we would look at a machine, in a very objective way. And he didn't identify at all with it, except when he needed to. So he was not disturbed by the bodily conditions. Whatever you read about in Bhagavad Gita philosophy, Prabhupada really manifested those qualities.
Some of the things that Prabhupada did, we can follow readily, or at least they're within reach, that at the end, if possible, we should come to Vrindavan if we know we're going to pass away. We should be surrounded by devotees, and we should be surrounded by the chanting of the holy name. Prabhupada did all those things. But the things you're describing, we can worship Prabhupada for them, but how do we relate to this, that he was... How could you, who saw him do this, convey to other devotees that they should do this? Or someone might say, "Well, I can't do anything like that. And in that case, how is it true that he taught dying by being so aloof?
I think that Prabhupada showed the standard of how to die. And we just pray to Srila Prabhupada that when our time comes, that we can be as exemplary in terms of how we tolerate illness and eventually dying. I can't see any other way that we can do it except to pray to come to that point ourselves at that time.
You can remember what we saw him do.
And try to, I mean, that's so much of what we do by trying to, Prabhupada said once, imitation of a good thing is good.
Yeah.
You know, although we say don't imitate, but the fact is to imitate a good thing is good. So even if it's an imitation, if we can emulate the behavior of Srila Prabhupada at the end in terms of tolerating these difficult times, very good. That'll be a good example for the others who observe us.
Yeah, I think that's good. Just that we can't come up to his level of preaching, but we're all inspired and we try to preach so we can be dignified and aloof like he was.
I could add another point just to show how much, you know, he was detached. He discussed with me where the samadhi would be. You know, I mean, that was not a very easy thing to discuss for either of us. It was easier, I think, for him than for myself. But he said, let us discuss now what will happen after, when I leave. Where will you put the body? So then we discussed the point, and he gave the exact location. And then he said, what about Mayapur? He said, if I'm not in Mayapur. We discussed where in Mayapur and where in Vrindavan according to where he left his body, because there was some talk of going to Mayapur. And then he said, if I leave my body here, then you take flowers from the ceremony and bring them to Mayapur and establish them there in the place where my house was going to be. So, I mean, that's very detached, in a sense, to speak about details of this time. And then one time he asked me, do you know how to perform the samadhi ceremony? So then he asked me to get information from the Narayan Maharshi about this. They called him there.
I accept that it was easier for him than for you, but it was... I remember 1 year we were having his disappearance ceremony and you were telling some of these details that you participated in, like talking with Prabhupada about this, and Brahmananda was sitting next to me. He said, nobody but Tamal could do that. But for many of us it would have been...
I was the most hard-hearted.
So let's talk about the third theme, how in these last months Prabhupada was always preaching with enthusiasm and concern for his movement, as he said, and he prayed that he'd be enthusiastic until the last breath. Some of the examples that he was talking a lot with Swarup Damodar, and during this time they put on a Bhaktivedanta Institute function, and he wanted to know about the preaching. When Hari K. Swami came with books, and when other devotees came with book publishing, he wanted to hear about that. And he was giving so much advice. And not only big preachers, but small incidents like when Paramananda Das came from Gitanagari, he brought a woolen blanket that his wife had made, and Prabhupada was cried and accepted it and was encouraging them to go on with their services. So very much in touch with the devotees who came in terms of their services within ISKCON. And then the outstanding personal example was that he was working on the Bhagavatam right until the end, with Jai Dvaita Maharaj holding the microphone right next to his mouth, and he was still dictating. So on this point of the Bhagavatam, some devotees were shocked that Prabhupada left before he completed the Bhagavatam. And how do you understand this? Do you think that he didn't complete his literary mission, although he said he wanted to complete it? Why didn't Krishna let him complete it?
I think from the very beginning, Prabhupada never knew exactly how long Krishna would allow him to stay within this world. Therefore, he said that he put everything he needed to put into the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And that was already completed before he even came to America. He said he put everything required in the first canto. Then the first book he began to work on after he had the Bhagavatam first canto and the Gita, he immediately took up work on Krishna book and Nectar of Devotion. Krishna book is the summary of the 10th canto, which is the summum bonum of the Bhagavatam. And that came out from the very beginning. Again, Prabhupada said, I don't know how long Krishna will allow me to be here, so I want to make sure that you have the Krishna book and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So I personally feel that the books, you know, even had he not done anything more than that, it would have been complete. I think also that Prabhupada left something for his disciples to do. The spiritual master can do whatever he likes, and he may have also wanted to demonstrate that even the most sacred of all activities, translation of the Bhagavatam, can be entrusted to his disciples. So that, in other words, to demonstrate that everything that I'm doing will have to go on. It's not that I'm the only one and things will stop here. Not that we think that whatever we've done after Prabhupada was to the standard that he could do it, but he did show that you're going to have to do as I did.
I also read a statement by him in those last days where he said, I've said everything I wanted in my books. If I live longer, I can say a little more. Sometimes we hear of great souls, even preachers, entering a state of samadhi in their last days where they concentrate on their eternal relationship with Krishna. Why do you think Prabhupada continued almost until the end, conversing with disciples and giving orders to preachers and so on? Or did he withdraw from us?
I think that this is demonstration of Prabhupada's actual position as a very, very confidential, intimate associate of Radha and Krishna. First of all, I feel that Prabhupada, he had a very strong sense of mission, purpose, for which Krishna and his Guru Maharaj were empowering him. All of the acharyas were empowering him to deliver the Krishna consciousness way of life and philosophy in the entire world. In other words, he certainly, we see now, and he certainly saw more than we could ever see, what his purpose in coming was, what he has done. Were it not for him, the world would not be, you know, have Krishna consciousness. He is the one who was selected by the members of the disciplic succession and by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya in this world. So that is his service to Radha and Krishna. That is the most. That is a service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the most confidential service he could perform to Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya, and he was doing that confidential service. And he was not a sadhaka. He was a siddha purush. He was a perfect person. Although he showed certain activities of a sadhaka, maybe even more so in his days in the Radha Damodar temple, but actually the fact is that Prabhupada did not perform, you know, he did not have to perform sadhana bhakti the way we do, because he was already on the perfect platform. And therefore, where we may have to withdraw from activities more and, you know, at some stage in our life to give more focus to our sadhana, Prabhupada didn't have to do it for the same reason. He was on a liberated platform. He could continuously engage in the service within this world of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we saw this many times in Prabhupada's life, that Giriraj Maharaj and myself were serving Prabhupada in Bombay. Prabhupada was fighting for the Bombay land, which was a very intense battle. Dealing with lawyers all the time, it was like it was so intense. And yet, when it came time to give the Bhagavatam class in the evening, you know, or Bhagavad Gita class, Prabhupada was just—it was just as easy. It was like he was going from one preparation in the meal to the next. Whereas for us, it was like, you know, our minds were spinning. We were just—it was so difficult to even deal with these subjects. What to speak of thinking of giving a class in the public But for Prabhupada, it was not any different. He didn't show any difference. In other words, he was, at any moment, he was immediately able to be in touch with Krishna. At any moment, he could enter in and out of Krishna's pastimes. So I don't feel that Prabhupada needed some type of preparation before he died to immediately, you know, to be able to meditate and be with Krishna, because at any moment he was always with Krishna. And sometimes he was with Krishna in his pastimes, and at other times he was within this world serving the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And both were equally valuable and good. So there was no, you know, he wanted to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the final end. And he wanted to show us that example also. In other words, I believe that another point is, that was addressed this morning by Jai Dodamarj, that we may not be such great sadhakas, and we may find that we will get as much out of preaching and remaining active till the end. As Prabhupada said, I want to die like a soldier in the battlefield. And he said, and if I die in New York, they can bury me on the roof, because there's no land. So in other words, you know, he liked that example, that I want to die like a soldier fighting in the battlefield. He wanted to show us that mood of preaching, and perhaps the reason being that he knew our failings as sadhakas. He knew that we weren't going to be like Haridas Thakur. We could not imitate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But the example he set of preaching, which allows for the utilization of many qualities which as international devotees we're born with, was more likely to be possible for us and would get us more distance in attaining Krishna. And I think a good example is our god sister Gauri, you know, who kept preaching and distributing books practically to the very end. And then when she came here, you know, the devotees who observed her, you know, leaving this world, they were astonished, because the things that she was indicating that she was seeing and experiencing were very elevated states of Krishna consciousness. So at a certain point, if you sacrifice everything for the mission of Guru and Krishna, then at a certain moment, you know, you will jump up. In other words, Krishna will help you to jump up to a position which you might not achieve if you were just trying to withdraw and elevate yourself personally.
And from our point of view, what you just said is, it was bad enough that Prabhupada was leaving. If 6 months before he had like shut the doors and just been with Krishna, then it would have been even harder, and it would have been an unusual example in terms of what everything else that he taught us. Perhaps we can talk a little. I had some questions about service and separation. Service and separation usually means between devotees and Krishna, as sort of like with the Brijabasis after Krishna went to Mathura, they experience his presence in separation. And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada teaches that this philosophy is very important for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and that the spiritual masters in this line, they should teach their disciples about how to experience this. From this chapter 34 in the Krishna book, he said, Lord Chaitanya also experienced this. Those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should also feel the separation of Krishna, worship his transcendental form, and discuss his transcendental teachings. So this Vipralamba, is there any relation between this separation from Krishna and the service and separation that we experienced by serving Prabhupada after he has disappeared, and as we're doing now?
I think even when Srila Prabhupada was personally present, we had to serve in separation, because so much of the time he wasn't physically present where we were. And Srila Prabhupada always emphasized that by serving the instructions of the spiritual master, one gets the association of the spiritual master. Of course, when Srila Prabhupada left specifically, There was another sense of separation and grief, because previously we knew that, well, we can go on serving in separation, and then after some time Srila Prabhupada will come and we'll be able to hear him speak Srimad Bhagavatam, or go on the morning walk with him and reciprocate with him in many ways. So then when he left, then we thought, you know, we won't hear him speak again as we used to, or we won't be able to reciprocate with him as we used to. And it definitely created a great sense of grief. But then the verses and purports in the fourth canto, where Srila Prabhupada said, when the spiritual master disappears, the disciple should weep just like the wife of the king wept when the husband disappeared, sort of consoled us and made us feel that what we were experiencing was appropriate. And even Prabhupada himself said it in one poem after his Guru Maharaj left. But ultimately the principle is the same, because by serving Prabhupada in separation, we can experience his presence. And the residents of Vrindavan, by serving Krishna in separation, hearing about him, speaking about him, and remembering him, they also experience his presence. So I think ultimately there's no difference. And Prabhupada is one of the eternal associates of Krishna, and I don't think there's ultimately any difference.
I have a question that's sort of vague in my mind, but maybe it's already been covered. The first day in this course, I described that there are two forms of the spiritual master: his eternal form in Krishna Lila or Chaitanya Lila, and the form in which we knew him, Sadaka. And then I said that we will teach in this course mostly entirely about Prabhupada as we knew him, to the extent that we can know him. But we should know in the background that he's not an ordinary soul, he's Nitya Siddha, and he has eternal identity. So then sometimes questions would come up that to any degree did he indicate things to us about the other nature? And I replied that sometimes when he did, it was almost in a light-hearted way. One example was when he was invited in these last days to go to his palace that was being constructed in New Vrindavan. And he said, well, we will have to see which palace I'm going to. It almost sounded like making a joke that he might go to Krishna Loka and not to New Vrindavan. And as you said, he said that was very inspiring to hear you speak about that how Prabhupada was so intense about our service as preachers right up into the end, and that was the best thing for our meditation. I suppose to defend against any minimizing of Prabhupada and to satisfy ourselves, we want to know that he's on the topmost position as anybody else. And I guess my question is, do you have any impressions about now, even as Giriraj Maharaj said, that we get to appreciate and know more about the spiritual master even after his disappearance than we may have known him while serving? Do you have any impressions about those what I called the two lives of the spiritual master from those last months? Is that clear what I'm asking for?
Not so much from the last months. I think that whatever impressions I have come since that time. Because one of my services in the last months was to think that Prabhupada was going to remain with us. So it wasn't to contemplate who and where, who was Prabhupada beyond this manifest form that I knew him as, and where was he going. In other words, whereas even though he did talk to me about his samadhi place, the fact is that my service was to encourage Prabhupada that he was going to overcome this illness, and he was going to lead the Krishna consciousness movement for many years to come. So I did not think at that time, nor did I see many indications from Prabhupada about revealing something beyond that.
So that's whatever he did is meaningful. Therefore, would you say this is the impression he wants us to have of him is Founder Acharya leading us?
Yes, but we also have his books, and from his books, it's very his books and his own example throughout his life. It's natural that we will also consider his relationship with Krishna, that he has his eternal relationship with Radha and Krishna, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given us the 8 verses, stanzas to the spiritual master, which describe him as a confidential, doing very confidential services, arranging for Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And Prabhupada has given us the Tulsi Arti, which tells us how to aspire. So there are enough indications from verses, from Prabhupada's own activities, establishing deities around the world, from his, you know, from these things to indicate to us that he has a very real active role in relationship to Radha and Krishna.
So we should never think that our understanding of our relationship with Prabhupada is complete or that we've developed it up to the highest point, but it's always evolving both as disciples and as associates of his.
I think that to properly meditate on Prabhupada, it would be natural to meditate, you know, as we mature more, we will meditate on his role as the founder Acharya, and at the same time we will also try to understand him in relationship to Krishna, to Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Both, that will give a more total and complete, comprehensive understanding of Prabhupada.
All right. Then we've used our time.
Namo Vishnu Padaya. The very prayer, the first prayer we offer is that you have taken shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. It definitely indicates, it's not only that you have taken shelter and pray to him in this world, it tends to indicate
he's very dear to Krishna.
Very dear to Krishna. He's Krishna Priya.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you all.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.